Welcome to The Cosmic Connection, presented by Astrology Hub. I'm your host, Amanda Poole Walsh, founder of Astrology Hub, here with master astrologer Rick Merlin Levine. This is your place to explore the order and beauty of the cosmos and your connection to it all.
We're live, Rick. Stop texting or doing whatever you're doing. Hello, everybody. Welcome. It's great to be here with you for the Cosmic Connection. If you are new to our channel, I would say go ahead and hit that subscribe button and the notification bell so that you are notified anytime we post new videos. You've basically just joined a worldwide astrological conversation. And this particular show, The Cosmic Connection, is featuring Rick Merlin Levine, one of the world's most incredible astrologers. And we come here almost every week to talk about different aspects of astrology and also to do some forecasting. So today's episode, we're going to be focused on the astrology for February and March. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Amanda Poole Walsh, and I just want to welcome you and just thank you for being here. All right. So we're covering February and March because we have an upcoming class with Rick, Astrology Foundations Level 3, where we're going to be covering, well, Rick's going to be covering harmonic aspects, quintiles, septiles, all the tiles. And that is going to be happening starting in February. So he will be taking a break to teach that class. We won't be having the Cosmic Connection during that time. And if you're interested in joining us, you can go to astrologyhub.com/foundations3. Enrollment is open now.
At the very beginning, you said something about all the quintiles, septiles, and all the tiles.
Yes.
Many years ago, you know, this whole area is not a new interest for me. I've been fascinated with these harmonic aspects, which some astrologers call minor aspects, but they're no more minor than using Mars or a square. And you know, they're very important. Many years ago, I did a lecture, and the title of the lecture was called, this is when the X-Files was a big program. And I did a lecture entitled The X-Tiles, The Truth is Out There. In it, I said I would talk about the quintiles, septiles, sextiles, kitchen tiles, infantiles, turnstiles, reptiles, and all the tile.
Perfect. I love it. I know that you're probably not going to be covering all those things in the upcoming class, but
no reptiles.
Yeah. I mean, we did an episode a couple weeks ago where we talked a lot about harmonic aspects and how this can take your astrology to a whole new level, because there are aspects beyond the ones that most astrologers look at. And I love what you said, Rick, about how they really point to the soul, and they also point to kind of the aspects of us that we don't see on the surface. And it just seems like it's going to be a really important addition to people's astrology and their chart reading and the way that they're, analyzing charts.
Yeah. And as I'll dig in further in the actual class, I actually believe the use of quintiles, septiles, and other harmonic aspects is part of a larger recover of the feminine point of view,
right?
Because it's the patriarchy that created astrology and focused on what we refer to as the three-dimensional world. And yet we know there's more stuff out there than what we can perceive. And these aspects help us tune in to those things that, quite frankly, the ancients weren't interested in, because they were interested in food and survival and shelter and staying alive, whereas we moderners have a bit more flexibility to pursue, shall we say, personal growth or areas of soul or things that are maybe not having to do with it.
It reminds me, I was recently interviewed for an astrological magazine, and the amazing, beautiful woman who interviewed me asked me a question, and it was around the sort of psychological aspect of astrology and whether or not I thought it was getting too, quote unquote, woo-woo. Like, are we losing the legitimacy of astrology because we're sort of moving into psychological realms and spiritual realms. And I, of course, I've said I don't think so, because there's a different type of astrology for every type of mind or every type of world viewpoint. And depending on what you gravitate towards, there's something for you. And also, I did bring in that it feels more like a feminization, that we're bringing in the heart, we're bringing in the intangibles, we're bringing in things that aren't, you know, so solid.
And well, you told me, when you look around in the world and you see, you know, people being randomly mass shot by people, executed by people they don't know. You see wars, you see famine, you see the mistreatment of people. And you tell me that we don't need psychological and spiritual help.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
You know, there's nothing woo-woo about the idea that we are not doing very well, even though we seem to have some of the material things under control. It's time to, focus on what's important.
Exactly. Yep. All right. Well, let's dive in. But before we do that, astrologyhub.com/foundations3 is the link to join the class. It is not only for people who have done level one and level two. If you want to jump in at level three and you already have a basic understanding of how to look at a chart, you're going to be ready for it. If you do want to catch up and take foundations level one, level two, and the chart reading extravaganzas that we've done, where Rick does live demos of chart reading, you can get the whole bundle at astrologyhub.com/Levine bundle. All right. So, Rick, let's talk about it. We're covering 2 months. I know that March is huge. So
I think what we'll do is first focus on February. And although March is huge, it's almost easier to talk about in a short amount of time because the events are so huge. They're very specific.
Yes.
And we won't go into as deeply as to the day by day or week by week. Obviously, people can get it here on the weekly, you know, forecast anyhow. But, you know, the thing I think that's significant about February and March, if we treat it as a whole, is that all the regular planets plus Chiron and Pluto are moving direct. And there's a sense that the progress that we've been on the edge of, the turning point from November of last year, of 2022, and then the jumping into 2023 with both Mercury and Mars retrograde, there was the sense of building frustration because we're not moving ahead as quickly as some of us would like. And I think that what happens in February is that we begin to see more progress. And by the time we reach the end of March, we're in a different world. I mean, I think things are going to move that quickly through the next couple of months. And so, you know, if we have to do our one liner for how we're going to refer to February and March together, it's very simple. It's hold on to your, you know, hold on to your hat. There's that saying of, you know, like when the wind blows, it'll blow your hat off.
Yeah.
You know, when the winds of change, you know, blow, everything's going to change. And I really do think, I recall Bob Dylan's line, it doesn't take a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. You know, there's the winds of culture and of time are changing and then picking up speed very fast. We are in a kind of a gale force period of time where we've almost become accustomed to so much change and yet so much holding back, so many restraints going back, you know, to March of 2 years ago. Has it really been 2 years? March of 2020? Or is it 3 years now? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It seems like forever. But there's been that sense of holding back. And now that energy is being released. And although we can drill down on the specific events, and we will hit a few of them, I think the important thing is to understand that we now have permission slips from the cosmos to move ahead. Now, I remember being in high school, if you were in the hall and it was between classes, you were not allowed to unless you had a hall pass. you know, that was signed by a teacher or administrator.
Yeah.
I am here with my trusty pen in hand to sign everyone's hall pass. You can do whatever the hell you want, or you can go for it. Now it's time. It's the proverbial, you know, excrement is hitting the rotating metal blades. You know, it's hitting the fan. And we're taking off. And I think it's really important to understand, though, that still, even though things are blasting ahead, if you've ever watched the countdown of a large rocket ship taking off, when it goes T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and it's blast off, the rocket just doesn't go. It goes like this. And it begins to build speed. And so even though things are now moving ahead, Mercury is still in its shadow, or it's coming out of its shadow. Mars, the same, comes out of its shadow at the end of March and then moves into Cancer. It's been in Gemini since September, I think. But the point here is that even though we're moving ahead, we have to maintain some sense determination towards where we're going without being frustrated that we're not there right now. And I think that's going to be the key issue over and over again.
Rick, in terms of where the change is going to be occurring, do we have insights into like areas of life or segments of the economy?
Well, large global change hits individuals differently.
Right.
You know, for some people, it's an intellectual matter. For someone else, it might be a family matter. For someone else, it might be at work. And that really depends on where these important planets are in your natal chart, both by aspect and by what house they're moving. Where these changes are going to impact us? Everywhere. Hmm. You know, but we'll all be... It's like the old story of the five, you know, blind people trying to describe an elephant, and one describes its foot and one describes its trunk and the other describes its, you know, hide. And we all are looking at the same large scale shifts, even going back to like the COVID experience. I mean, there was a global experience that we all shared, no matter what end of any belief spectrum we held, it doesn't matter where we were on that spectrum of extreme to extreme. What was going on out there was going on out there, but we each internalize it and react to it differently. So by the same token, now that Mars is no longer retrograde in February and is moving quickly or more quickly through Gemini, you know, it's at 10 degrees of Gemini at the beginning of the month. And the fact of the matter is that by the end of the month, it's only at 19 degrees of Gemini. So it moves about 10 degrees for the entire month, which is not as fast as Mars normally moves. It's moving ahead and we're feeling impulsive. We're feeling ready to go. But things are not happening quite as fast as we might like them to. So one of the things to do is to look at your natal chart and see where in your natal chart Gemini falls. For someone who has a Gemini rising, it falls in their first house, perhaps. But for someone with Gemini on their midheaven, Mars moving through Gemini might be in their ninth or their 10th houses. And so depending upon what area of your chart Mars is now moving through, that may be where you're feeling this building thrust, and yet it still may not be moving as fast as you wish to move. Now, that's just Mars, and you can take Mars also and say, as Mars moves through Gemini, now from about 10 degrees of Gemini to 20 degrees of Gemini by the end of February, to a couple of degrees of Cancer by the end of March. In fact, by the time we get to the end of March, Mars is at 3.5 degrees of Cancer. So if you have any planets in that sweep, Mars is going to impact them for the few days when it becomes exact. And in fact, if you have any planets at the opposite sign, let's say 10 degrees of Sagittarius to 2 or 3 or 4 degrees of Scorpio, of Capricorn, or if you have any planets square that, in Virgo or Pisces, this determines how it's going to impact you. Now, if you happen to have planets at 10 to 30 degrees, let's say, of another air sign like Aquarius or Libra, then this Mars is trining those planets. And so how we react individually is different than what's going on up there. What's going on up there is that Mars moving through Gemini is retracing old territory. This is about communication. This is about the interchange of information. Gemini is about the back and forth information. Note my hand doing this. That's because Mercury moves around the sun faster than anything else. And like a pendulum, Mercury goes back and forth. It's why the word mercantile is a Mercury word, because a merchant basically is selling information, and there's communication that goes back and forth in the forms of goods and services and money. And so this idea of Mars moving through Gemini is re-emphasizing all those things that began to be stirred up last year in September, and certainly coming to a height when Mars turned retrograde in late October and through November and December. It's these same issues now that we might see resolution on globally, culturally, politically, economically, and from an individual standpoint, maybe most importantly, personally, because all those changes that we see environmentally are all in some ways reflections of what happens to us individually. So the Mars and Mercury thing is extremely important. And the fact that we begin this period of time on February 1st with Mercury having just turned direct and moving through Capricorn, we would want to track Mercury as it moves through Capricorn, and it moves rather quickly. By February 10th or somewhere there, February 11th, Mercury moves out of Capricorn and into Aquarius, and now our antenna go into the future. And Aquarius is going to become more important of an energy as Pluto moves into Aquarius in March, where it only stays for a couple of months. But I think that Mercury moving into Aquarius, we're blasting into the future right now, with the understanding that through all of February, Saturn is spending its last entire month in Aquarius. Now, remember, Saturn creates solidity. It crystallizes the metaphysical into physical. It makes things real. And Saturn is resistance, and resistance is what makes things real. When we run into resistance, whether it's a wall or a people saying no, what we do is we pull in and we get it together more to make it real. This is how crystals actually grow. They grow by contraction, by pulling in. And when Saturn moves out of Aquarius in March, Saturn moves into Pisces. That becomes very important because Saturn's ingress or move into Pisces on March 7th, even though it's going to be causing that crystallization in Pisces, and we'll talk about that a little bit and for the next couple of years, no doubt, the fact is that when Saturn leaves Aquarius, Aquarius is going to breathe a sigh of relief. Saturn's gone. Dad's not home anymore. We can grow. We can expand. We can move into the future. And with Mercury having moved into Aquarius, I think that's going to be a significant piece of the energy, even though Mercury catches up with Saturn at the very, very end of February. There's a Mercury-Saturn conjunction, which I think will crystallize stuff. I think the date on that is actually I have one too many pieces of paper here, 2 months. And normally I just work with a month. Yeah, Mercury actually lines up with Saturn exact on March 2nd. And so that's just like a couple of days before before Saturn leaves Aquarius and moves into Pisces. And so I think we're going to really be doing some crystallizing, some condensation, some pulling in to make the future seem more tangible and more real. And of course, by later in the month, when Pluto enters, when it leaves Capricorn and enters Aquarius, that begins a whole deeper transition. This is on March 23rd. But we're already feeling that Pluto in Aquarius, even though it's a month and a half, almost 2 months away from when we're recording this. I mean, with everything that's happening right now with artificial intelligence and robotics and all of that, it's just so much going on. This is like the getting ready moment. This is like the prenatal, pre-birth experience of what I think is going to explode gradually and powerfully during the couple of decades when Pluto is moving through.
I literally just got off a call where I was learning about AI and how AI can help us in so many different ways. And I've generally been somewhat resistant to AI. Just the concept of it feels sort of creepy and, I don't know, weird. But after this call, it was the first time that I went, oh, wow, okay, that could actually be very helpful. And that could actually, you know, enable people to focus on other things because some of these more menial tasks could be covered by AI. But I mean, I don't want to go deeply into what I was learning, but it was fascinating. And for the first time, I was like, wow, I can actually see a quote unquote use case for this that doesn't creep me out. That feels like asset.
The thing though is here is that we're on the tip of something that's such an incredible transition. It's a larger transition than the creation of the internet. That's how
wow.
This transition is.
Whoa.
And in some ways, you know, science fiction has for at least a century written about things that seem like they're made up, but become reality. I mean, you can go back to the early 1900s, you know, when there were books like, you know, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea about these submarines that could go under the water and stay there. There was no such thing. You know, there were flying machines and rocket ships and things like that that have become gradually one by one reality. Now, one of the main, conflicts that appears again and again in science fiction, and yes, I've read more than my fair share of science fiction. In fact, nearly 40 Oh my God, 50 years ago, I wrote the following line, which still stands as one of my best rhymes I've ever written. It's only two, it's a couple of two lines. And it's, science fiction has become science faction. But look at the robots, they have no reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's here. We're here. Isaac Asimov's science fiction about iRobot and the three laws of robotics that was written as fiction is now what's actually being used in the creation of artificial intelligence. And just cycling back, and I don't want to hang up here because there's more to cover, but one of the basic conflicts that sci-fi authors have addressed again and again and again and again in looks at the galaxy and the future, thousands, tens of thousands of years into the future, is the battle between what they call the orgs, O-R-G-S, and the mechs, M-E-C-H-S. These are the two classifications of intelligence that in 100,000 years are still battling for which is dominant. And the orgs are the organic. They're the carbon-based intelligence consciousness like we are. Oh. And the mechs are the mechanical life forms that may have been originally created by the orgs, but became their own life form. And I think the thing is that people have to get out of their head that what we create is unnatural. People go, oh, I want to go back to nature. And I'm not suggesting that being in the midst of green forests without any human creations isn't a magnificent, wonderful thing. I do believe that. On the other hand, humans cannot create anything that is not nature. We are part of nature. We are not something separate from nature. And in fact, it was the great media thinker, Marshall McLuhan, who said that machines actually were a new phylum of creation on the planet, just like we had mollusks and mammals, that machinus was an order of life form, and that human beings were like the honeybees of the machinus phylum. Our job was to pollinate the phylum and keep it going. Now, all I'm saying here is that the changes that we're on the very front end of are overwhelming and severe. And I think that people with the beginnings of the public availability of programs like Chat, GPT, and other programs, we're going to begin to see that this stuff isn't science fiction. It's science faction, and it's going to be right upon us. And I really believe that February and March, aside from all the other things that are going on, is going to be another level of Thomas Wolfe's You Can't Go Home Again. We're in a different world. You know, it's like we can't, just because we wish life was simpler and that we liked things when we were 3 years old and the way things were, we can't go backwards. We are going forward, and no amount of resistance or government by old people who are afraid of the future is going to stop this movement into the future. I think is the underlying lesson of February, March, and even
I'm recognizing in myself that the resistance is mainly when it feels like it's a threat to our survival. It feels like a threat to our being here or our.
And this is Pluto's job. Remember, Pluto's job is to threaten what you think is your survival. You know, during a Pluto transit, someone who's trained for decades to become a ballet dancer has an accident and breaks their foot and can't be a ballet dancer. And it's to them, that's death.
Right.
In other words, because we identify ourselves with ourselves the way we are now.
Right.
Pluto's job is to change. Now, for the last 20 years, as Pluto's been moving through Capricorn, what has it done? It's changed the safety that we felt that the outside structures, government, you know, banks, the medical industrial complex, whatever we thought these outer structures were, which are all Saturnian Capricorn things, Pluto has blasted them so that that safety net no longer exists within our head.
Yeah.
It's like death. That's Pluto's job. It's not physical death. It's ego death, for lack of a better reason. It's the death of that part of us that is such a strong belief that we're attached to it and we think it's ours. And yeah, you know, that idea of wanting to get back to nature, you know, on some level is nostalgia. Now, again, I do believe that it is absolutely soul healing to be where there are no cell phones, to be off the grid, to be surrounded by green or green and blue. You know,
there's nothing like it.
There's nothing like it. However, there's nothing like it because that's what we are biologically attached to in our past. It's our judgment. Doesn't mean that sometime in 1,000 years, when humans are living in contained environments in moving through space, if that's our destiny, I'm not saying that it is, that will be what we like, because that will be what we're used to. And, you know, yeah, there are people who could say that life as we live it here in the 21st century, if you gave that to someone 300 years ago or 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago, they'd say, this is terrible. You know, this idea of having what these people have, this is just like, this isn't human.
Rick, when you've said that before on this show, and I've thought of it so many times, like if someone had said, you're going to be doing work staring at a box where other people are superimposed, communicating with a bunch of people over the world that you can't see, but you know are there, like it would sound creepy, right? It would sound, but here we are on StreamYard doing this and it's amazing. I mean, there's so many.
Yeah, but Amanda, but you're also creepy.
Appreciate that compliment. Okay, so let's go back to the astrology. So we have a big, huge explosion in tech, like AI kind of futuristic things, potentially. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think on a closer to home level, you know, if we just look at what's going on in February, I mean, there's regular things happening like planets changing signs. I mean, in February, we already mentioned Mercury moves into Aquarius, which frees up our thinking to be okay thinking about concepts on an emotionally detached nature. That's on February 11th. On February 18th, the sun moves out of Aquarius and into Pisces. And now this is grounding us a little bit more back in that realm of compassion, of feelings, of kind of psychic sensitivity, that's on February 18th. And incidentally, that's followed by the new moon. The new moon is on February 19th, and that is the Pisces new moon. And it's a very early new moon. I think this is in some ways not a seed for the future. It's a reminder that it's important for us to find that place within where we have a sense of self-awareness, a sense of I think it's sensitivity, because there's so much going on out there. When the planets begin to stack up in Pisces, there's a reminder that it's important for us to be in touch with those things that we feel. And the two lunations in the month of February are the full moon on February 5th and the new moon on February 19th. Now, the full moon on February 5th is a full moon in Leo. And here we are confronted with the difference between the, I think in some ways, the outer world, the Aquarian world of things that are changing so fast with the sun in Aquarius, and the moon in Leo, and that is, what do I have to bring to this? And the awareness between the difference between what I'm going to call the inner and the outer, but it's really how the inner expresses to the outer, it's the moon and full moon in Leo, and how the outer, this is the Aquarius, is received by the inner, this dynamic. And this full moon on February 5th is square to Uranus. And so I think that this full moon on February 5th is a bit of a shocker, especially since the fact that during this same full moon, we have just within a day of it, we have not only Venus square Mars, but we have, in fact, the sun square Uranus all at the same time. And so I think that there's conflict, there's change, there's dynamic, potential for upheaval. This is on February 3rd, is the sun square Uranus. The 3rd, 4th, leading up to the 5th on the full moon. I think this is a very powerful new moon, a full moon. And then we get to the new moon, and the new moon again is on February 19th. And I think that the new moon, the thing that's important about it, is that it is at the first degree of Pisces. It's literally at 1 degree of Pisces. And I think here, we're intuiting what's going to happen in the future. And remember, Jupiter and Chiron are already in Aries. Jupiter's whizzing through Aries through January, February, March, April, and by May it moves into Taurus. So Jupiter's moving crazy fast right now, as fast as it ever moves. And on top of that, we have Venus moving into Aries on just an hour after the new moon in Pisces. Venus leaves Pisces and moves into Aries. And I think this is exciting because it makes us aware that we can, that there's something in the future for us to like. Venus is what we're attracted to. And although traditionally Venus is not at home, as a matter of fact, it's in its detriment, it's exiled in Aries because it's at home in Libra, the sign opposite Aries. And so traditionally, Venus is not thought to be fantastic in Aries. But, you know, with Venus, we can make it work wherever it is if we're willing to know where it is. And in Aries, that Venus likes the moment. It works with being in tune with the moment and going with that flow. And so I think that the February 19th and then 20th, I think, is a very important piece of time. Also, we have Mercury forming a sextile. Mercury at that point in time moving through Aquarius, forming a sextile with Chiron, coming off of a sextile with Jupiter. There is room for healing here. And boy, goddess knows we could use some real healing. These are key dates in February. One other thing that I think stands out in February is on the 15th, I know I'm going back and forth here, but on the 15th, we have a conjunction between Venus moving through Pisces. Remember, Venus is exalted in Pisces. When Venus is not in her home signs of Taurus or Libra, she prefers to be in Pisces because she can be lovely and sweet and considerate and compassionate and sensitive. And Venus in Pisces is lovely unto itself. But she joins up with Neptune, who's the modern ruler of Pisces. Neptune has been in Pisces for a decade and a half now or more. And Venus, as it catches up to Neptune, and this is exact on the 15th, when this occurs, there's this sense of being in love with the illusion. Now, here I have to say, and I know I've said this before, that an illusion isn't necessarily untrue. An illusion is a wish. And being in love with a wish can be delusional, or it can be the source point for creating something that becomes real. Because remember, as William Blake wrote, what is now real was once only imagined. And so this Venus conjunct Neptune on the 15th is an absolute opening for the artistic, poetic, dreamer, fantasy, imaginative portion of our brain to work. And yet it's being squared by the moon in Sagittarius. The moon in Sagittarius has a goal. It's a long-term goal, and it knows it wants to go in that direction, but we may be sidetracked by our imagination. So those are the most significant things during the month. I think that this month is mostly exciting because there's new stuff happening and we can feel it happening. In fact, on the 22nd, 21st and 22nd, we have Mercury then forming a square with Uranus and then a trine with Mars. This is a buzz couple of days also. Mercury's square with Uranus is new erratic ideas that are kind of maybe blowing our mind. Maybe we learn things that are like, wow, I never knew that. This is changing everything. It's like lightning striking. The aha is happening. And yet the following day on the 22nd, Mercury trines Mars, which gives us a way to work with that energy. It gives us somewhere to go with it. And I think that we could be, this is really, really, I think, really important, really lucky. But with this mid part of February, before I leave February and shift gears by moving into March, there's one other thing that happens in February that I want to mention. And I already mentioned that Mercury moves into Aquarius on February 11th. Well, on February 12th and 13th, 14th, there's 4 different aspects from Mercury and Venus, two outer planets, Pluto, Uranus, and Neptune, that are based on septiles. Now, in transit work, I don't often focus a lot on quintiles and septiles like I do in natal work, like we'll be covering in the Foundations Level 3 course. But sometimes it's just overwhelming. And it's like for 2 or 3 days from the moment that Mercury moves into Aquarius, that's on the 11th in the evening. On the 11th in the morning, sorry. By the 12th, early in the morning, Venus makes a septile. That's 1/7 of a circle to Pluto. And then it makes a biseptile to Uranus, a septile to Neptune, a septile to Uranus. Venus makes a septile to Uranus. Boom, 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 boom. What are septiles? They're otherworldly. They're supernatural. Dane Rudger said they were fated. Things come out and things come through that were somehow in other realms that all of a sudden are like in our face. And like Uranus, it's like lightning striking. And I think the combination of Mercury going into Uranus's modern sign of Aquarius and all these septiles will awaken us to the idea that we don't see everything we think we. And of course, it's not lost on me that this is the first week of the Harmonics Level 3, the Foundations Astrology Level 3 course. And it's just such an overwhelming septile message that we get from the universe. I really think that this is going to be a bit of a wake up in mid-February. And what that is, time will tell. Okay. Are you with me? How do we do?
Yes. Was that a pause for me to say something, or was that a pause for you to gather something?
That was, as a friend of mine used to say, it was a pause in the disaster. Yeah, it was a pause. It was a pause to say something or just take a break or for me to take a breath in a simple.
Oh, take a breath. Great. Perfect. We've already touched into March a lot, but what are you seeing there? The biggest things?
Well, the two biggest things in March, the three biggest things in March are Mars, Saturn, and Pluto. And why Mars is a big thing is that Mars actually enters the sign of Cancer toward the end of March. March 25th. That will end Mars's 7.5 month stay in Gemini. And what's intriguing about it is that even though Mars is coming out of its retrograde, coming out of its shadow period, by the way, the idea of a shadow period was a term that was coined by a dear friend of mine who just passed away this week, a woman named Roxana Muse. And Roxana Muse coined the term shadow to describe that period in particular when Mercury moves through an area, back through an area by retrograde, and then direct the third and final time. That area that's covered three times, she called the shadow, and it's just caught on. It's a term that people use as if it's been an astrological term for centuries, but it really has only been an astrological term for a decade. And hats off to Roxana. May her travels be far and wide in her disincarnate state of. The significant thing here, though, is that as Mars moves out of its shadow by the end of March, actually, I think it's around March 21st or 2nd, is when Mars moves past that 25-degree Gemini point. And by March 25th, it's into a new sign. It's into Cancer. But remember, Mars is the forward thrust. And Mars, being a forward thrust in Cancer, is a bit of an anomaly. It's an oxymoron because Mars is moving forward, but in Cancer, the energy is receptive. And here again, I think we have a little bit of a conversation to have about traditional astrology versus modern astrology. In traditional and Hellenistic astrology, Mars is said to basically be debilitated, to have negative dignity in Cancer because Mars is exalted in Capricorn. Cancer is its opposite, is the opposite sign. And so Mars is, they say, kind of handicapped a bit. It's harder to express its energy in Cancer. Now, that may be true in a strictly patriarchal society, because with a strong Mars, you're expected to go beat someone up or to dominate your area, to be Mars, the god of war. You know, a functional Mars is a Mars that takes over some other country. I mean, this is about the dominance of what might be considered to be an aberrated masculine or patriarchal directive. It's manifest destiny. That's a functional Mars. But it's only functional if you're looking at it from the standpoint of the patriarchy. And so, yes, Drea has already noted, Mars is more gentle in Cancer. It doesn't mean that it can't be fierce, especially in defending its home, its family, its loved ones. You know, that this is Mars in Cancer is incredibly fierce for that, but it's fierce on its home grounds in a defensive manner rather than going out and conquering. And so we have Mars coming off of this period of time of retrograding and holding back and building up frustrations, and it begins to move forward in a sign that still wants to hold back. So this, to me, is kind of intriguing and may have an important lesson in this for us. Mars doesn't move out of Cancer until the middle of May when it moves into Leo. And then all of a sudden, we may see the energy of the past 6-7 months at that point in time from May to October, November, when Mars first turned retrograde. We may see that energy all of a sudden exploding out into the open and flowering. So Mars is an important deal in March, because it's by the end of March, it's moving into new territory and moving into a new sign. The other two planets that are significant in March are Saturn, which I already mentioned, moves into Pisces on March 7th and stays there for a couple of years, actually about 2.5 years. And so Saturn moving through Pisces. And Saturn has for the last 5 years been in a Saturn-ruled sign, because Saturn traditionally rules Capricorn and Aquarius. And so Mars is moving for the first time in a few years, in 5 years, into a sign where it's not at home. Think of a fish out of water. A fish is Pisces. Pisces is for fish. And so we're moving the goat, the mountain goat, into the water. And so it's like Saturn needs to learn new tricks. Saturn no longer can work just on its authority, whether it's a singular authority as it is in Capricorn or a collective authority as it is in Aquarius. And so I think that by the second week of March, March 7th is the shift date, I think pretty quickly we're going to get a sense of a different style of authority, of leadership. It may not impact the national and international political scene right away. That may take time for that to bubble up to that level, but we'll feel it in some ways in our personal lives. Then as we move through March, we do have Venus moving out of Aries and into Taurus on March 16th. That's another important shift, because Venus moving into Taurus is Venus moving back home. Taurus is her favorite home sign. Yes, she's at home in Libra, but in Taurus, she's embodied. In Libra, she's intellectual. She's mental. In Libra, Venus is more about the aesthetic sense of what's right, whether it's color, balance, artistic nature, diplomacy, counseling. All those things are Venus in Libra. But in Taurus, Venus is this. This is touching.
Uh-oh, Rick, you're being so sensual that we can't hear you.
Oh, no.
I know. Can you repeat what you just said?
Yes. So did you get the part about Venus and Libra being okay?
Got that.
So I brought the microphone closer to me because this is how unessential. No. That in Taurus, Venus isn't about thinking. It isn't about ideas. It's about, I'm doing this with my fingers. It's about the yumminess of touch. It's about sensuality. It's about physical pleasure. You know, if we think about the bull, Taurus, the bull, unfortunately, many people think about the bull in a bullfight, the nostrils flaring and the neck tightening and their, you know, that bull getting angry and stomping its feet and charging. That's not Venus. That's an aberrated Venus. That's not a bull. That's a bull that's been bothered. Think of Ferdinand. Ferdinand the bull's greatest pleasure was to lay in the field in the sunshine, smelling the flowers, chewing the grass, just kind of soaking it all in. It was only when that Ferdinand was bothered by a bee or a fly or a human being that it would have to kind of get up and get angry so that it could go back to being pleasure. And so Venus moving into Taurus on March 16th is actually the beginning of about a little bit more than a month of Venus being in such a place where we might actually take a deep breath and remember what it is that feels good rather than being distracted or attracted by what's happening in the moment. Now, having said that, there are two other things that happen that are important also. And one of them is that Mercury moves into Aries just a couple of days later on March 18th, followed by the Sun on March 20th. That's the spring equinox in the Northern Hemisphere, the autumnal equinox in the Southern Hemisphere, March 20th, when the Sun moves into Aries. But what that means is that even though Venus is in her own home yummy sign of Taurus, where she can be indolent and lazy, and Jeff Jauer, my old astrology buddy, used to say when the going gets tough, Venus in Taurus grabs a sandwich and hits the couch and turns on the TV. You know, there's that sense of indulging oneself and being lazy. However, with both Mercury and the Sun moving into Aries, there's now a part of us that's still driving to be present, to go someplace new, to explore. And that's setting up what happens 3 days later. And that is, after 18 years, Pluto moves out of the sign of Capricorn, where it's been, into the sign of Aquarius for a couple of months. It's like dipping its toe in the pond just to see how it feels and to see what's important. And then it goes, Pluto in Aquarius, and then it goes back into Capricorn by June, and then it goes back into Aquarius next year, where it'll stay. It touches back into Capricorn just for a month or so, and then it's off into Aquarius for its couple of decades. And so by the end of March, March 23rd, when Pluto moves into Aquarius, which I mentioned at the opening, we're already feeling, but it's still holding back because it's still in Capricorn. But as Pluto moves into Aquarius, it's going to be like, okay, the future's here. Now, what are we going to do about it? And obviously, when I say the future's here, it's a bit of a statement of, caricature, overstatement, hyperbole. That's the word I was looking for. Because it's going to take years for Pluto to find its full voice moving through Aquarius. And yet by the 23rd of March, when Pluto does step into Aquarius, we're going to definitely feel that energy, followed by Mars moving into Cancer on March 25th. And so the amount of dynamic swirling and changing that's occurring with no planets retrograde through March, I think really makes March a, you know, hold on to your hat, or maybe get a hat with that tie that goes beneath
you. A little bonnet.
Neck.
We can do a bonnet or one of those, like, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That's it. But then we'd have to be able to hold on to the hat and lift it up to let the bee out of our bonnet.
That's, Okay, Harvey has a question. So we get, this is the question. So we get previews of Aquarius Fear before the main release in 2024?
Well, I think Fear is a bit of a choice. You know, I think that we have to understand that there's nothing inherently good or bad about any astrological transit. It's how we react to it, which is not the same as how we respond to it. How we react to it is our gut feeling, which may be fear, but how we how we process that fear and how we actually respond to it then actually becomes part of the co-creation of how that Pluto manifests. Remember, it was Pluto and Aquarius that manifest through the Declaration of Independence, the the founding of the American ideal, whether it was true in reality as much as it was in the mind, that's Aquarius thing, you know, that it actually occurred, the French Revolution, the same, you know, and so, yeah, there are shadow sides of everything, every planet, every sign, every humans, even Sagittarians, have shadows. That just goes with the deal. But the fact is that to focus on the Pluto fear is not useful. I mean, if a caterpillar was afraid of the cocoon, we would have no butterflies. And so there's a natural process. I think sometimes it's hard for us to remember in our egoic illusion of thinking that the ego is in control, to remember that we're just surfing a 2 billion year old life wave. That's what we're doing. You know, there's this wave, this tide that has been kind of moving through for a couple of billion years. And we're just on the wave of now in that moment. And the foolhardy thing to respond, to go, oh my God, it's Pluto, I should be afraid of it, that's just crazy making, because it has to do with our fear of loss of what we think is important, or our fear of loss of what we think is permanent. None of us are permanent. I mean, look, I do not have a death wish strong enough to be considering suicide now or ever in my life. I mean, I know other people have and do. I have so many planets in Aries, I don't leave a lot of room for thought inside me. But I understand it. But the thing is that people fear death. I remember Ram Dass once saying that the great American death mantra was, oh shit. You know, but death, Helen Keller said, death is like moving from one room into another. And I don't want to go down this particular rabbit hole, but I also remember William Blake, who wanted for his epitaph, he wanted on his gravestone, William Blake, born 1757, died many times since. We go through death. And again, I think of Ram Dass's disincarnate friend, Emmanuel, who once said to Ram Dass through a medium, Ram Dass, if there was one and only one thing I'd want you to know about death, it's this. It's perfectly safe. Yes, we fear Pluto because having Roto-Rooter come into us biologically doesn't always feel good in the moment. But what doesn't feel good about Pluto as Roto-Rooter, cleaning out the old stuff, getting rid of all the shit, as Pluto does that, what doesn't feel good is our resistance to that change. And so, we might have a residual fear. I know someone earlier said that they had something at 0 degrees of Aquarius and they were fearing, you know, Pluto. Well, just think about every Capricorn you know, including our dear, lovely hostess, Amanda, who is a Capricorn, has sun in Capricorn, or has a pile of planets in Capricorn. Amanda can attest to the fact that even though some of the changes were quite profound, she's here and she's smiling.
It is true. And Pluto's literally sitting right on my 28 degree Venus right now. And then we'll be on my 29 degree Sun. And then we'll be crossing my Aquarius ascendant. So I'm with, like, everybody has transits that we look at and it's like, oh God, what's going to happen?
Yeah. And right? The worst thing about a transit that we say, oh God, about is this, saying, oh God, that makes it worse, you know. And again, I think it might have been It's the, you know, that which we resist will persist. You know, mm-hmm. It's like the more fear that we place onto a transit coming up, the worse we can guarantee it'll be. You know, your fear, push those buttons down until they don't, you know, run them through your head, get rid of all that stuff, because by the time it happens, it won't be as bad as you thought it.
So how do you do that? So basically, we know that the more we fear, the worse it's going to be. So then you get afraid of your fear thoughts. It's like a double whammy, because now you're afraid of being afraid because you know you're going to make it worse. So how do we actually deal with that fear?
Years of therapy. No, well, there are different layers of fear. You know, there are fears that we can simply say, you know, this is stupid. I know I'm afraid of this, but I see why. Yeah. And that every time I have that fear, I'm going to say out loud, even if there's no one around, I'm going to say why I know this fear is just based upon something that's no longer true. That helps me undo the engram or the tape that plays automatically. I mean, we forget that so much of our brain, it's been thrown around 95%, 97%, 80%, doesn't matter. Most of what happens in our lives happens not because we're in control or we're thinking about making it happen, but it happens totally on an unconscious level. And don't give me this, oh yeah, I know that happens unconsciously, because if you know it happens unconsciously, it's not unconscious. Unconsciously means you don't have a freaking clue. You don't know. And so that's where most stuff happens. And so in order to undo these built-in behavioral tapes that we had wired biologically as an infant, as a prenatal, as a toddler, that it takes work. And there's many different methods that we can use, for undoing these. There's so many methods in modern psychology and meditation and various spiritual practices that whatever works for you is what you do and you try them. But remember, again, I hate to always lean on Ram Dass, but Ram Dass once said, he had to have been 65 years old when I saw him say this. And he said, you know, there's not one neurosis that I had when I was a teenager that 40 years later, that after decades of drug therapy, of psychotherapy, of psychoanalysis, of meditation, of yoga, of spiritual practice, of everything. He goes, there's not one neurosis that I had then that I still don't have now. But then they would cripple me for days, weeks, months, even years at a time. And now they come and go like old friends. So I don't think we get rid of our fear. I think we learn to put it in perspective. I remember many years ago, I went through a particular sequence of events that it's not like I don't want to share it. It's just too much to share now, TMI. But I went through this period of time where I was having incredible anxiety attacks. This is back in my mid 30s. And I had a very astute therapist who said, when this begins to happen, when you feel your heart rate go up and you get short of breath, say out loud, these symptoms that I am having are not immediately harmful to my life. These symptoms that I'm having are not immediately harmful to my life. They are real symptoms, and yes, I am having them, but they are not harmful to. And I began to say that. And as I began to say it, I began to realize that these were just symptoms. And I could look at them from that point of view. And eventually it became that and perhaps other things that it's something that just kind of disappeared into the past. So I don't have a quick and easy answer.
Yeah.
But I do know that the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is fear. Mm. And so how do we deal with fear? We practice.
You know, somebody earlier said a quote from Krishnamurti that said something about with all the change and the technology and everything, we're going to need to find a new religion. And I was literally just in a house today, and there was this big sign on the wall that said, love is my religion. And that's basically what you just said.
And it's a song by Ziggy Marley.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they put it on the wall. It's great. Okay. So do you have anything else to say about March? No.
DNA. I don't know. No, I mean, there's a lot of dynamic change, and a lot of that change, some of it will happen in March, and some of it will just be the setup.
Yes.
For what will continue to occur. Because remember, when Pluto moves into a sign, just get hints. We get senses of what's going to happening. And Amanda, you and I had a conversation, short conversation before we went live. And I think that what's happening right now with the public awareness around robotics and around artificial intelligence, what's being called AI, as if it was like some monolithic thing out there, but AI, is ultimately going to be larger than the internet. That's how big a change this is. And we can kind of cower in fear of it, or we can figure out how we're going to interact with it, because we're not going to be able to stop it any more than we could stop using the electric light, you know, or steamships when they were, you know, invented in the 19th century. I mean, this is where we are. And this is going to be, I believe, a strong part of Pluto in Aquarius. And yet, I strongly believe that the real impact of Pluto in Aquarius is going to be something that we can't talk about. Why can't we talk about? It would be like being in 1985 and wanting to talk about an iPad.
Right. You don't even know yet.
Or on-demand music and movies. It was just like there was no technology there for it. And so I think that we're going to see these new technologies have impact in our life. And so I think that that's a large part of what happens, again, as the very origin seeds. And sometimes when things are seeds, we don't even know that they've been planted until they begin to germinate, or until they turn, you know, into a forest or poison ivy.
I keep thinking of water when you talk about Pluto and Aquarius and any of our and our resistance to this like huge, huge change wave that we're in, and just how we can. I mean, there's always opportunity in anything that's happening. It just depends on our relationship to it. And this idea that it has to be the orgs versus the mechs. Maybe it doesn't have to be a war. Maybe there's a way that it can all work together, and maybe exactly. That's going to be a choice. Maybe exactly. You know, some will choose to see it as an adversarial relationship, and maybe there will be an option to not choose that.
And you talk about Pluto and Aquarius and images of water. Remember that Aquarius is the sign. It's an air sign. So it's conceptual and intellectual and emotionally detached. And yet, it's the water bearer. It's pouring water out of the pitcher. And here's what most people don't realize. And that is that when that air has moisture in it, air is a water bearer. And when there's no moisture in the air does not conduct electricity. That just like in our nervous system, in order for a nerve impulse to travel down our arm, it doesn't just take the nerve cell, which is potassium and sodium, it takes water, wetness, to make electrical spark go. And in a dry atmosphere, there's very little psychic transmission. People are reserved. People are pulled in compared to a tropical, humid climate where there's just more of an intuitive, knowing, emotional, the Mediterranean, the Latin people, the people of the Asiatic or islands, the Pacific Islands and so on. There's just a different zeitgeist comparing them to the people of England or Norway or Japan, where there's less water in the air. So Aquarius is the water bearer, but it carries water in order for the communication to be transmitted. So, and it's of the air signs. It can be a wet air sign because that air can carry moisture. Think of being in a steam. And so I think it's an important thing that you brought up, that with Pluto moving through Aquarius, yes, we can, out of fear, closed out emotions pull in, get tight and dry up, or we can choose to stay moist, to stay, to stay in that place. Another thing that I remember about what Jeff used to say about Aquarians, Jeff used to say, Aquarians like humanity. It's the humans they hate, and they love love, but they like love without moisture. You know, it's that witness. And the thing is, though, remember, we have Saturn moving into Pisces.
Right.
And we have other planets now in Pisces during this time. Mm-hmm. And so it's Pisces that reminds us that it's okay to be wet. It's okay to be vulnerable, because water is vulnerable because it takes the shape of its.
It takes the shape of what you cut
it
out.
It takes the shape of its container.
Yes.
Unless it's in Scorpio and it freezes, in which case, as ice, it doesn't take the shape of its container as readily. But the point here is that there's nothing to fear about any planet moving into any sign, except for our inability to work with that energy because of irrational fear.
Okay. Speaking of water pouring from the sky, I don't know if you're hearing the feedback, but there is a like torrential downpour here. So I'm sorry if there's some feedback from the rain that is falling on our rooftop here.
I can't hear anything at all. No.
Oh, wow. Amazing. Okay. All right.
I can't hear you either, though. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. So the theme for the next 2 months is hold on to your hat, or get a little bonnet with a tie underneath it. If we are having permission slips from the cosmos to move ahead. And I loved the visual of you literally writing us permission slips, Rick. I like that. You're saying we're taking off, but still maintain your sense of determination of where you want to go. You said that in February, there's going to be a lot of crystallizing and pulling in to make the future more tangible and real. And we had lots of a big full moon energy in February, shocker, powerful new moon at the first degree of Pisces. So intuiting the future. But then when we move to March, which is really the main feature of the 2 months, it really has the most powerful astrology. Yeah.
The most obvious. Sometimes there's incredible power coming into what.
Yes, true. Okay. Mars, Saturn, Venus, Mercury, Sun, Pluto, big players in March. Mars is moving into Cancer, where it will be until mid-May. So this is, mid-May is when it moves into Leo. And this is where we might feel that pent-up energy from the last, but at that point, it'll be like 9 months. Moving forward, maybe exploding forward. We have Saturn moving into Pisces. This is an opportunity to learn new tricks, work beyond the regular ideas of authority, different styles of authority and leadership. So working with those kinds of themes. Venus into Taurus, think of Ferdinand the Bull, soaking it in. Remember what feels good. Mercury and Sun moving into Aries. Again, that's the spring equinox or the equinox, depending on where you are. Pluto into Aquarius. The future's here. What are we going to do about it? And it will take years for Pluto to find its full voice, but we're going to start to get previews of what Pluto in Aquarius. How long is Pluto in Aquarius, Rick?
About 18 years.
18 years.
I don't have the exact date in front of me.
Wow. But you also said that by the end of March, things will be very, very different than they are right now. Yes?
Let's see. Pluto moves out of Aquarius and into Pisces. It looks like it's 2040. Oh, yeah. Around 2042.
Wow. Yes. So our conversation about
20 years.
Resistance being futile. I mean, this is not a flash in the pan. Like, this is definitely a big turning point. Yeah.
That's exactly correct.
Okay. Well, Rick, you are amazing.
Oh,
if If any of you want to study with Rick in February and into March, you are invited to Astrology Foundations Level 3. Rick will be going through harmonic aspects and really helping you see beyond the standard Ptolemaic aspects of opposite.
Zodiacal aspects and harmonic aspects are not as scary as they sound. And although, Amanda, you are billing this as a four-week course with 2 weeks of bonus, in my mind, I'm seeing this as a six-week course.
Well, yes. I mean, it'll be a six-week experience for sure. 4 weeks of core curriculum plus two bonuses. One, where Rick will be demonstrating the content by looking at people's charts and reading the harmonic aspects, and students in the class have an opportunity to be selected for that if you want. You don't have to throw your name in the hat. But then the other bonus will be a live Q&A. So we'll be gathering all your questions throughout the whole 4 weeks, and then we'll be doing a dedicated Q&A, and we'll be doing a dedicated chart reading experience just for this idea of these harmonic aspects. So it's going to be an amazing class. If you want to join us, it's astrologyhub.com/foundation3. Thank you, everyone, for being here. It's so fun to do these live events. Cosmic Connection is the only show that we're doing currently live. And it's just so much fun to be able to engage with all of you real time. So thank you to those of you who caught the live. If you're watching the recording, thank you so much for showing up. Thanks to everybody that shares these videos, hits the like button, hits the subscribe button. That really helps us get this show and astrology itself out to more people. AI likes it when you do that. So it shares it more. It takes the feedback cue from you that this is good content and it goes, oh, maybe more people will like this. So,
and of course, everything we type in the comments might appear in someone's term paper in the future.
So true. Actually, this whole entire talk might be in someone's term paper in the future.
Amazing.
Yes. Amazing. Yes. It's literally mind blowing. The far reaching expansive change that's going to happen. I'm happy to be in the canoe with all of you experiencing these changes and being aware of the astrology as we do it. I don't know about you, but just the awareness itself just helps us get into a mental mindset or do our spiritual work or do our emotional work or whatever it is to be able to ride these shifts and changes, I think, a lot better than people that don't have the astrology, because a lot of the times they get blindsided by these things. Or they resist when the astrology is saying resistance is futile. Like, this is happening. You got to learn how to roll with it, move with it, surf it. Yeah. Okay. Thanks everybody for being here. Thank you for making astrology a part of your life. We will catch you on the next episode. It'll be a while until we have another Cosmic Connection. Is that right? Or do we have one more before class starts?
We have one more before class starts.
All right.
And so thank you, Amanda, for making all this happen.
Oh. It's my pleasure. It's so much fun.
It's our pleasure.
Our pleasure. Yes. All right, everybody. Take care, and we will see you soon.
If you've studied astrology, you're probably familiar with aspects like trines, squares, and oppositions. But did you know that there are a lot more aspects you can read in an astrological chart? In Astrology Foundations Level 3 with Master Astrologer Rick Levine, you'll learn the magic of quintiles, septiles, and other harmonic aspects. And understanding these aspects will take your understanding of astrology way beyond the ordinary, or even what you thought was possible. Rick Levine is one of the foremost thinkers on harmonic aspects, and he's going to share his mind-blowing perspective with you in Astrology Foundations Level 3. By the end of this four-week course, plus two bonus weeks of live sessions with Ray, you'll get a complete overview of harmonic aspects that will change the way you look at astrology forever. Learn more and enroll today at astrologyhub.com/foundations3. Again, that's astrologyhub.com/foundations3.
This podcast is presented by Astrology Hub. You can learn more and find all of our shows at astrologyhub.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes and help more people find the wisdom of astrology. Thank you for taking the time to do this now. Thank you for being a part of our community. and for making astrology a part of your life.